Georgia's best and largest school district has a new superintendent for the first time in more than 25 years. And he stopped by Teaching Gwinnett to discuss a wide range of topics, including the district's face mask mandate, social-emotional learning, his relationship with the Gwinnett Board of Education, and so much more. A one-on-one conversation with Dr. Calvin Watts, Gwinnett County's first African-American school superintendent, is next on Teaching Gwinnett. Welcome to another edition of Teaching Gwinnett, a Gwinnett County Public Schools podcast. I'm your host, Bernard Watson, and I'm pleased to be joined this morning by Dr. Calvin Watts, Gwinnett County Public Schools Superintendent. Welcome.
Thank you, Bernard. It is a pleasure to be here this morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, look, I'm going to jump right into it. Are you settled in yet?
So I would say, first of all, I appreciate the question and the term settled in is a tricky situation, right? And so what I mean by that is it's a yes and always. So I arrived literally boots on the ground July 29th. And after obviously board approval of contract, really hit the ground sprinting. And I don't know that most people can truly comprehend or understand or even appreciate the depth and breadth of a cross-country move. It doesn't happen instantly or instantaneously. It happens over time. And my wife and I have adjusted. She actually was able to join me about a month and a half after I began my tenure. So yes, and we are settled in and still adjusting. Our son is 3,000 miles away and becoming the very best version of himself. So we're settled in at the same time, enjoying our recent relocation to Gwinnett County. And I couldn't be more excited. Certainly the work has taken precedent in terms of the vast majority of my time. But I have my wife, who's my partner in this work, as always, here to support and help serve the Gwinnett County community.
And you mentioned her twice right there. So we really want to hear about the real boss in all of this.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
Ms. Watts. How has she been handling the transition? How has she settled back here in Georgia?
No, it is. It's a beautiful thing. So she's handled it as she always does, like a true champion. And certainly, she will. If she were here, she would admit that generally speaking, change isn't one of her most favorite opportunities in life. However, she has learned to appreciate the differences and the beauty that change can bring about, and the improvement, most important, that change can bring about. That said, she is a Georgia native. That's where we met when I relocated to Georgia. Right after I began my teaching career in the Seattle area, and as she will remind me often that was the best professional move I ever made when I began teaching and coaching in Carrollton, Georgia, specifically Carrollton City Schools, where she grew up, and that's where we met. And so my mother-in-law also just gave me the son-in-law of the year, I should say, trophy that I hold dear. For bringing her daughter back to one of three, her daughter back to Georgia. So yes, we're in good stead.
Hey, listen, you need to ride that wave of goodwill. Anytime you can please the mother-in-law and she's happy with you, ride that wave.
Course. Hey, it gives me one more free subscription of sweet tea for a full year.
There you go.
Yes.
Okay. Now that you're back in Georgia,
yes.
Any challenges readjusting to living here? Weather, traffic, pace?
I appreciate that question, Bernard. And the more I reflect, the irony is, while I was born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, as many years as I've lived on this earth, as many trips around the sun as I've had, I've actually lived more of my life on the East Coast, the Southeast, to be honest. And so it's almost as if, as I shared with our son when he when we brought him back to Washington State, for my most recent superintendency, my first superintendency, I should say, he was not real pleased with us. But I let him know, you know, it's not a bad thing to be bi-coastal, right? To be able to say you've lived in different parts of the country. And to be honest, Georgia feels just like home, much like Washington does, just to very different stages of my life. So, yeah, the weather is not much different. It rains. Actually, our son told us when he moved, he said it rains more in Atlanta area than it does in the Seattle area in terms of annual inches. So that's just a fun fact for those who say it rains all the time in Seattle. It actually rains more in terms of annual inches here. And it rains harder, right? I didn't know what a pop-up storm was, so I did understand that when I moved here. Traffic has increased, and much like Seattle area, I'm used to the traffic. So, you know, it wasn't that big of a transition just because of how long I had lived here previously, which is 21 years.
Is this everything you expected?
So it is everything that I expected of the job of superintendency, and I say that because of my previous experience of 6 years in the district where I serve, in my home state of Washington, specifically in Kent School District. The job itself is the same. Certainly the scope of the work has changed due to, you know, the size, certainly the enrollment, the politics, the change in surroundings. Those changes are significant and sometimes can provide additional challenges that exist, and at the same time they can also provide even greater opportunities. And so, you know, we've been able to engage in what I refer to as a look, listen, learn tour, which is really simply put the entry plan, which is what I've engaged in no matter what role I've served, whether it's serving as a principal or area or assistant or associate superintendent. I've always begun my entry into any new role with the idea that I cannot assume anything and I don't know everything, so I must begin by interrogating reality, right? Asking those questions and recognizing that other people were here before I was. And so let me respect the context and the culture by asking questions and not making any assumptions before I make recommendations for change or to and change can be one of two things, right? It can be something that we do differently, or it can simply be something that we are doing that we may need to stop. And those can be challenging decisions, but they can be made much more palatable when I move at an understandable pace, which is another word for saying as slow as some may need me to go, but also as fast as others are willing.
How many schools have you visited so far, and how many more are left?
So out of 141 schools thus far, I've visited 45, I believe that's the last count, 45 as of the first day of school. And the goal, as I've pledged, is to visit all 141. And that is, so we're certainly on target for the, you know, the full calendar year. We've got some work to do, but I've been very pleased and excited, and certainly have enjoyed meeting every member of our school communities, from principals, assistant principals, teachers, support staff, and families, and certainly our students, each time I've stepped into classrooms or the hallowed halls of our school facilities.
An editor's note: since we conducted this interview, Dr. Watts has visited an additional 40 schools during his Look, Listen, and Learn tour, bringing the total number to more than 80. What have you heard during the tour that has been encouraging to you?
Yes, Bernard, I heard a lot. I've heard from teachers and students and families. I've heard from students that they're just glad to be back in person. And I've heard from teachers that they are also glad to be back in person, and that they presently are struggling in some ways because of the transition, not only from their work, in some cases from concurrent instructional models where they were, you know, essentially teaching both, you know, in person, live, and through virtual means, and that's a challenge, especially as we are working to reinvent how we deliver instruction and how we support education in general, I've heard from families that they are glad that their children are back in school. And certainly I can imagine for all sorts of reasons. Most importantly, that they're back because this is the safest and best place for students to be. And certainly it is a place where the design of a school is to make sure our students are learning and achieving at increasingly higher levels. They can do more and get closer to that end at a school than they can at home. And so I'm sure some parents were also excited to get their children out of the house as well or back into school. But in all seriousness, I think I've heard multiple levels of happiness and content with where we are. Certainly we know that there's much work to be done, but generally speaking, people are excited to be back in person.
What have you heard during the tour that maybe is concerning?
I think, Bernard, the saying goes multiple realities can coexist. So sometimes and many times two things can be true, even in the same sentence. And one of those, while people are very glad to be back, I've heard that from most recent Teacher Advisory Council meetings, from meetings with our administrators, staff and families, the reality is, what I've also heard is that there are concerns about learning challenges, gaps that exist because of the inability, based on the height of the pandemic, inability to reach and teach each and every child in the way that we would normally during a non-pandemic educational experience, right? Those social emotional connections that a teacher and a student can make when they're sharing space and place in a classroom. And I say that because behaviors can be influenced in positive ways when we are interacting with one another in a school facility. Absent of that, it's hard to mimic that. It's hard to recreate that same relationship. Not impossible, but it's much harder to recreate that relationship through virtual means. And that's really the one choice we had to make sure that we were safe, but also to make sure that we could, in some way, extend the teaching and learning opportunity between students and staff. And I think that's one of, just simply put, natural and I dare I say, unintended consequences of our pandemic.
Okay. So when you started this Look, Listen, and Learn tour, you mentioned you don't go in with maybe any preconceived notions, blank slate, want to hear what people have to say.
Right.
Can you share something maybe you've heard that you weren't expected to hear? Again, I know that you don't go in with preconceived notions, but I'm sure you probably had some idea about some of the things you were going to hear. But is there something or maybe more than one thing that you've heard that was a little surprising or you weren't expecting to hear?
So I think I heard a lot, and certainly some of the comments that I've reviewed most recently, some that were maybe most revealing and maybe in some cases concerning, had to do with what our students said, what our primary customers in this work. Some said that they wish they had more time outside. I heard many examples of why do we still have to wear masks, and certainly that may be a rhetorical question. But certainly, I think we do know the reasons why we do. I also heard that students, some students felt, particularly at either middle or high school levels, that their schools needed more sunlight, and that they felt, one or two comments that I heard that I saw that they felt their schools were less like schools, and they felt like they were built on a the model of a prison, and that was concerning, certainly to hear that anytime a school is not viewed as a place where students can thrive, where they feel that they're free to learn, to befriend their colleagues, and to be loved and cared about and held accountable by our outstanding teachers, that was also concerning. I did also hear, Bernard, that you know, essentially the politics of this work have come to the forefront. And as I work very closely with our staff in GCPS, and also have the unique opportunity as a superintendent to work with another team of Team GCPS. That's our board governance team. And in my experience, what I've learned is that most people don't necessarily understand the nuances of working with you know, a superintendent's relationship with the school board. And that, to me, is one of the most exciting opportunities, and also the most challenging, because it is a unique relationship, right? They are the collective, my immediate supervisors. I also work with them as a unified team, and that's our work every day, to become more and more unified for the purpose of addressing the needs of our students and our staff and our families. And I have heard, generally speaking, some questions and concerns about how we're doing. And I've always said our goal is to be in a constant state of continuous improvement. And you know, we actually met as recently as yesterday evening to continue our work in becoming the very best version of ourselves as a board governance team. So those are some of the, I would say, the high level topics that I heard and have heard, and we'll continue listening. And I've shared this before. The Look, Listen, Learn tour, yes, it's technically part of the first 90 to 100 days, and that's technically school days. But it's also a strategy that I will continue to use and never assume that I know everything. Continue to ask those important questions of our community.
You mentioned several things in that last answer that sort of piqued my interest. That's pretty heavy that you hear from children that maybe they felt like the school was more like a prison. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it, you know, I first would want to speak directly to those students and ask, you know, what is the reason and rationale. What I did hear, and I can only make a, you know, an informed assumption based on the information that was shared in the comment, simply put, yeah, there were comments about, you know, the walls of our schools or respective schools. It may not be all, and I'm also being mindful, but these are but a few comments that I heard. But the walls of our schools were bland, or they look like concrete. And I, you know, and I said, I understand, because we do need to use concrete to build our schools. But what I sensed is that they were looking for, you know, at least some opportunity to create a sense of home as opposed to a building. And when we reflect on how many hours our students spend during, how many hours our teachers and in some case, you know, our support staff, in some cases even family members who volunteer their time, how much time they spend in those buildings, the question could be posed, you know, what should a school look like? On the outside, on the inside, those are questions that I'll certainly be bringing to our, you know, chief operations officer, and really interrogating what is that. So what does this mean to you? What is this? You know, when a student says this, and you know, and how might we provide some options? And I know we've done that in several of our newer facilities, and there are spaces and places where light can come through. But I do think those are areas that when we listen to our most important customer, I think we owe it to them to at least see how we might improve upon their experience on a daily basis.
You also mentioned about your relationship, working relationship with the school board. We're going to get to that a little bit later on in the show. But for this segment, I want to ask one last question. What can our school community expect to come out of the Look, Listen, and Learn tour?
Well, I think like any entry planning process, I think our community can expect that we'll know more about the nuances of Gwinnett County Public Schools. There are not many people who have the same level of access that I have right now to every core function of our organization. So I have conversations regarding finance and facilities and our most important business of teaching and learning and human resources, communication, and recognizing that that we are doing well in so many facets of our K-12 environment that sometimes if we aren't careful and we aren't constantly taking a look in the mirror about how we're doing or how we're serving our community, sometimes we may miss a step and may not be addressing individual needs as they are needed or as those needs arise. That's part of my focus, is to make sure that I'm communicating what I've learned, what I see that I didn't notice, or what I see that others may not have noticed. And I'll be asking members of our community to join what I call a transition advisory committee of some sort, or advisory team. The branding of the name is not quite finalized, but the idea is that there will be a diverse group of leaders within the community, those who have a vested interest in Gwinnett County Public Schools being successful, and to actually ask them to spend some time with me to review the data that I've collected, to review the anecdotes, the comments that I've collected, and to provide me with recommendations. And what I've always said, I want to provide every opportunity for individuals to provide me with their say. They may not always get their way, but it will be informing in terms of how we move our organization, the 13th largest school district in the country, the largest school district in the state of Georgia, how we move GCPS forward and ideally in the right direction going forward.
Well, Dr. Watts, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we'll continue our conversation about your term as superintendent of Gwinnett County Public Schools. Stay with us.
Wash your hands! First, you need some soap, then scrub for 20 seconds. If you don't have a clock near you, then sing the ABC song. Be sure to scrub front and back, under your fingernails, and between your fingers. Dry your hands with a clean towel or a paper towel. For more information, go to www.cdc.gov/cleanhands.
And we're back. I'm joined again by Dr. Calvin Watts, superintendent of Gwinnett County Public Schools. And Dr. Watts, over the last few weeks, we've seen a sharp increase in the number of threats against our schools posted on social media. Our police have investigated each and every one thoroughly because we have to take these threats seriously. And fortunately, though, they've determined that they're not credible. And what it appears is kids are posting these threats thinking they're funny, or that they're a joke. But this is not a joke, is it?
No, Bernard, far from it. And let me state unequivocally, social media threats are never a joking matter. One, because the fact that social media has such an influence in the lives of our students and our adults as well, it is certainly a phenomenon regarding communication that we just can't take for granted how impactful it is. When our students receive threats or our staff receive threats and our families are informed, life changes. And number one, the absolute number one priority for each and every educator, especially me, is to make sure that each one of our 179,000 plus students are safe, that our staff, our 22,000 staff members are safe, and that our families who might be in our buildings at any point in time during the instructional day are safe. Their safety is our number one concern. And so when threats like this do come about, and unfortunately, there are individuals who feel, that these are jokes, and that they are just, they're just kidding and they don't mean any harm. Well, what they don't understand is that we as officials in Gwinnett County Public Schools, particularly our SROs, cannot take this matter any differently than believing that it is true. and that's how we respond. And so it is not it's certainly not a joking matter. We know that families are impacted. I can tell you now, I was visiting schools on our most recent threat and went to one of our high schools that had received the same threat. And the vast majority of students, Bernard, were not physically enrolled during that day. Families chose, or students made a decision to not come to school. And I want to say, at least two-thirds, if not more, of students were not physically in the building. That impacts teaching and learning. That impacts, obviously, the safety and security of those who are engaged in our respective school communities. And speaking of my communication with students, and I've had the opportunity to speak with some outstanding individuals. You certainly among them, Bernard, and most recently I had an opportunity to be interviewed virtually by two of our students, journalism students at Mill Creek, and they asked me a very similar question, and I shared with them a very, I'll just say a similar response about their safety being my number one concern, our number one concern, and it was brought to my attention that some of these threats might be as a result of students not wanting to engage in educational activities or wanting to, you know, to get attention. And so we talked about that, right? And I do believe that every behavior communicates some form of need. And that leads me to the question, why? Why do students believe that this is okay? Because it's not. And that leads me to believe that we have some, you know, some more work to do in addressing those individual needs of our students who unfortunately have made a decision, and we do have some individuals who are being held to account. And I want to make it very clear, in situations like this, when a student is found to be a sender or even an instigator and sends messages like this, they can be charged with, it's a criminal activity. And we've had at least one student I'm aware of who has been arrested because of this act. And so it is serious. It's serious. And we never want that for any of our school communities. So my first and foremost pledge is to make sure we maintain a safe and secure environment, but also to share with our students, this is not a good thing. It is not a joking matter. And I would ask them to discontinue even thinking that this is okay.
When something like this happens, these students can face criminal charges, and those charges can follow them for, you know, a good part of their life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not a joke. And our authorities certainly do not take it as such. And for good reason, right? We can't let our guard down, and that's just the reality. And so consequences certainly are severe because the actions that were being perpetrated, certainly perceived or real, it was very serious, and we take it as such.
What can parents do to help us with this situation?
Yes, Bernard, I as a parent, and I say this, I remember as a, and I'm sure you do as well, when we were children, right, the world was different, and at the same time, I remember, saying when my parents held me accountable, I would say for the most part, I was a really good kid, right? I'm sure for the most part, but I made some mistakes, and I used to say that, when I'm a parent, I'll never do that, or when I'm a parent, I can't believe you did that, when I say to my parents, under my breath, but I realize I had no idea what the job description of a parent was until I became a parent. My wife and I, who have one son who we claim on our taxes outside of the $180,000 that we claim, the reality is it's part of the job. It's the essential function of the job to hold, to love your children, and because you love them, to believe in them and to not let them fail. And ideally, yes, children are going to make mistakes. We want to make sure that those mistakes are not life-altering, and this could be one of them. So parents and families and caregivers, please continue to impress upon our students, your children, that that these are serious matters, and that if they are caught, certainly it can change the trajectory of their life in an instant. But also asking questions, just to take time, you know, just to check in, you know, what are you feeling? How is school? Having those conversations when a child knows that their parent or their family or member or caregiver is curious about their day, they're more likely to engage in those conversations. Not always, and I was a teenager once. I know it wasn't always the most comfortable conversation to talk with my parents, but the reality is I knew that they cared about my well-being, and that's what I would want for all of our parents, just to be reminded. And if they do need additional resources, to contact our local schools. Our school counselors can support and assist them with ways to speak to their children, to help them understand how they can find out if something, what behaviors should they be watching for the children if they believe something, you know, just doesn't seem right. So I would impress upon our families just to stay engaged and make sure our students are heading in the right direction and making really good choices.
I'm going to pivot now to a different topic. And I think it would be fair to say that right now, when someone says Gwinnett County Public Schools, one of the first things that comes to mind is our mask policy. Where do we stand with the mask mandate?
I appreciate that question, Bernard. And that's a question that I've heard from many different parts of our community. And I respect the right to pose that question of anyone, particularly those who may be inconvenienced or feel as though this mask is oppressive or is simply, you know, ill-timed. Whatever the rationale is, I respect everyone's right to believe what they believe. I also know that part of my responsibility as superintendent is to ensure that each and every member of Gwinnett County Public Schools is safe. That's the first priority. We must ensure that safety, physically, socially, emotionally, that those factors are, you know, are a number one before we can even focus on core instruction, before we can focus on building a building. Those are the number one priorities. So where we are right now, we are and will continue until such time that our CDC guidance has changed. We have ongoing conversations with our district nurse and certainly our county health department, and we remain in constant contact. And so while I know that neighboring districts have made different decisions in terms of metrics and school by school, we have not chosen to move in that direction. Now, the reality is we do know that our virus and what we've known, no matter where you've been in the country or the world, for the last 18 to 19 months, each one of us has been going through the very same thing. And I can say this just from my recent experience in previous organization, but here's what we do know. We know that the virus itself is unique. It's powerful, and it's actually designed to do exactly what it's doing, which is to evolve, to mutate. And it's hard for the average human being to actually understand what that really means. And so even when we think that situations are improving, the virus is doing its very best to find, you know, other hosts to thrive in, and changing once even the fact that we have vaccinations and we have mitigation strategies such as mask wearing. We also know that what typically happens during winter is that the weather conditions become cooler. And when that happens, typically we spend more time inside. And what happened in my previous organization, what happened in most other school districts throughout the country during the winter months, because more people are inside in closer proximity, we saw increases in those cases. So we have to be mindful of that. This is not the time to make that decision. And I know that may be unpopular for some, but the basis for this decision-making process is always grounded in the safety and security of our students, our staff members, and the families we serve. And I will also add that we are providing opportunities for our students to take breaks. There are mask breaks at our schools. For those schools that exercise outside time, there are opportunities to have mask breaks as long as there's proper social distancing. And to be honest, when our students are eating, obviously, you know, we can't eat or consume beverages while we're wearing a mask, but we do, you know, move that mask in its appropriate place above the nose and covering the mouth once we're done eating. So we do have those strategies in place. We know that there are countries around the world that have worn masks as a daily you know, standard. And I used to question, why is that? And I'm not saying, so please don't share or don't intimate from this conversation that we're suggesting that we're going to be wearing masks forever. That's not the case. But the reality is, now I understand better. So at least I can say that I can empathize and understand why there are communities in, you know, on this planet who have chosen to have a mask wearing culture for the reasons that they've chosen. And so I trust this will be in our rearview mirror, Bernard, at some point in time in the near future, sooner than later. But right now, we'll be continuing our mask mandate until otherwise noted, and continuing to monitor the data and to follow the guidance of the CDC.
Over the last, I'd say, year or so, we've had quite a few disruptions at our school board meetings, even prior to your term here as superintendent. How is that impacting the work of the school board and the district?
Well, I think it's unfortunate. You know, again, I say it's impacting it because of the actual, as you said, and I can't use a better word, because of the actual disruption that occurs. And whenever you have a planned event, and just so people are aware, when we have a business meeting of the board that's held in public, which is what happens on every third Thursday, typically in Gwinnett County Public Schools, that is a planned meeting. That is not just an ad hoc, everyone come together and we'll talk about a few things. That meeting is well planned. There are presentations that are created by staff to inform our board and our community and to be reviewed by our board governance team, which includes the five elected board members and me as the board governance team, that we are constantly reviewing data, having conversations, making important recommendations and decisions that impact the lives of our students and our staff and our families within Gwinnett County Public Schools. It is not lost on me how impactful and how serious this work is. And so the disruptions, for obvious reasons, give us a greater challenge. And it while it does make it more difficult, perhaps, or more challenging to work as a unified team when we have disruptions, the reality is we know what our work is. We're working now with staff to make sure that our disruptions are minimized. And I have to believe that the vast majority of our members of our community who are coming to our board meetings, in general, they mean goodwill. I do believe there are some individuals who have alternative ideas about the meeting, but I would ask them to consider that the disruptions are in fact disrupting business. And just like any other corporate entity or organization, if you were disrupting business in a grocery store or in a clothing store or in a car manufacturer, there would be, you know, some level of accountability, and that's what we're working towards, not to harm anyone. Certainly, we want people to be able to come to our board meetings and to feel safe, to feel that they can listen and participate and be a part of the meeting itself. But absent of that, we do need to make sure that we have, and we do have systems in place that are designed to help us continue to have a safe, orderly business meeting. We've had conversations with other colleagues in neighboring districts because what we do know is this is not a phenomenon that's exclusive to Gwinnett County Public Schools. But it is, unfortunately, it's a phenomenon that many board and board governance teams across the country are experiencing. And that's, while it is, it's not necessarily convenient, nor is it fun to go through, I'll be the first to say, it does give us an opportunity to really redesign or replan and do our best to make sure that safety, once again, remains our number one concern. A close second is the ability and the willingness of our board governance team to help inform our community of the business of our school district. And that's always going to be our priorities in that order. So what we are ensuring is that we will remind our communities when they arrive at our board meetings early and often in our preamble what expected behaviors that we are seeking, and if there are behaviors that occur that are outside of that, to let our community know what consequences and accountability may be at stake or in place, and to help hold them accountable. And we don't want to disrupt the meeting. We don't want the meeting to be disrupted. We certainly don't want individuals to be held to account in such a way that may bring about criminal charges. We certainly don't want that. But we do know that we have that capability and that option if we are put in that position. But I do believe every human being has a choice, and I think that that we need to continue to choose how we're going to show up at meetings, knowing that our students are paying attention, other adults are paying attention to our behaviors, and we don't want to send any message that this behavior is appropriate. We don't want to send the message that this behavior is going to be accepted or tolerated. But we want to make sure that people understand this is a meeting, a business meeting of the board that's held in public, and it should be able to be viewed or attended by members who wish to do so.
Social-emotional learning is one of the priorities that you've mentioned quite frequently since becoming our new leader here in Gwinnett County Public Schools. Can you briefly explain to people who may not understand what it is?
No, I appreciate the question, Bernard, and certainly I've often said this, that when most people think about learning, they think about learning in a classroom. They think about learning as learning how to read or learning how to compute or learning how to think critically. Those are all aspects of what I would call the fundamental core instruction in a K-12 or pre-K-12 environment. What I also know to be true is that before learning is cognitive, it is social. The fact that we are having this conversation today is a social construct. We are actually communicating with one another. We communicate in various ways. We communicate in words, we communicate in deed, in actions, and we communicate in ways that sometimes people may not truly understand. We communicate by eye contact, body language. We communicate through behaviors. Every behavior is communication. If I'm walking with my head down, yes, you can look at me and say, am I sad or am I thoughtful? Well, one of those could be true. Either way, I'm communicating one of them. And so what I've heard and what I call the idea that social emotional learning is a bad thing is something that I just refuse to acknowledge. The fact that we are social creatures. We know that developing relationships with our students, with our colleagues, with our families, that's why we actually exist. That's what families do. That's what friends do. That's what colleagues do. So to say that social emotional learning is something counterproductive is just not true. And I refuse to acknowledge that. The reality is, what we are saying is that we recognize that learning itself has a social construct, and that when students feel like they are included in a conversation, when they feel like that their teachers or the adults in the school care about them as a human being, as a student, and to be honest, I pose the question when I met with about 35 students at a park with two of our board members about 3 weeks ago. I thought we were going to be there for maybe an hour. It was about 3 hours later from my in-depth conversations with students, one-on-one or, you know, five students at once, just having an engaging conversation. It was a brilliant afternoon. And I shared with them. I said, you know, my goal as a superintendent in the organization, that all adults will see you, first of all, and know you by name, by your face, to be able to recognize you, that says, I see you as a human being, I see you as a student, as a member of Team GCPS, by strength, and that means I know, you know, where your successes may show up more so than others, and then by individual need. Where do you presently struggle? How may I support you? And when they looked at me like, wait a minute, is that's what you want for all adults? I said, yes. I said, technically all adults. They may not articulate it in that way, but all of our adults should want this for our students and our colleagues. So we're having those conversations. And if learning is social before it's cognitive, and I believe that, then we need to continue finding ways to maintain those social relationships between our students, our staff members, and our families. It will make us a better organization. I truly believe that. And social emotional learning is about behaviors. And if you take a look, and for those who are listening, read our mission statement. Remember, our mission statement is why we exist. That's why organizations have a mission statement. And it answers the question, why do we exist? And I challenge everyone, once you read it, to take a look at the 17th word in our mission statement. And a spoiler alert, the 17th word in our mission statement is behaviors. And so if we are monitoring behaviors, that's how we communicate with others. That's part of social emotional wellness and learning. So it's an important aspect. It's one that I take very seriously, and it is certainly something I'm proud of, that we are engaging or re-engaging and reprioritizing with regard to our next steps as an organization.
How do we implement that?
Yes, great question. And it doesn't happen by accident. It's intentional. There are ways that. Like any form of instruction, it has to be taught. And that's through the, again, another investment in resources, which is our investment in our adults, our leaders, and professional learning. There are simple ways, for example, to help, you know, a teacher or a counselor to understand what it means to connect with another human being, whether it's a student, staff member, or a family member. Because every one of those individuals has a set of values that may be different from our own. And that means they may have communication strategies that may be different. So I need to connect with you first socially. And so we teach strategies. For example, something as simple as a warm welcome. When I come into school, I remember, and no one had to, I mean, I learned this from, you know, great educators that I had in my family, but they taught me, you know, how to engage students when they come in the classroom, that they weren't students anymore. They were scientists, they were mathematicians, they were authors. And we created that environment that they transformed when they came into Mr. Watts' classroom as a sixth grader, or seventh grader, or eighth grade student. You know, it's a high five, or now, you know, it's a fist bump, or it's an elbow bump. It's connecting with our students in ways that we may not think are important, but ways that our students say, you know what, he cares about me, or that person cares about me, or she thinks I'm important. That's social emotional learning. And I asked the students, I go back to this is one of the most powerful questions that I posed to. I remember when one of my mentors shared this with me, and I said, may I borrow that? And of course he said, it's free. And so I asked our students, Bernard, I said, so I need you to think about this. You don't have to have the right answer, but I want you to be thinking about this. When you're absent, if you're not at school, whether it's for, you know, you were ill, or you had an appointment, can you think of an adult who is wondering, when you're absent, why you're not in class, and wondering how you're doing? And they smiled and they thought, yeah, I can think of someone. And I asked the same of our adults. And I said, when you're absent, you know, if you're not at school, or you have a substitute, you can't be present at school, can you think of students in the classroom that you connected with in such a way that they're actually wondering how you're doing when you're not there. And that's part of social emotional. That's the connection. When we make those enduring connections, that's how teaching and learning and ultimately how our students and their performance will thrive.
Earlier in the show, you mentioned about the working relationship between you and the school board. How do you characterize that relationship so far in terms of implementing the changes that you think are necessary in the school board's priorities and what they want to get done? How is that relationship going so far?
Oh, I appreciate that question. I think I would capture it in one word. It's emerging. And when I say emerging, it's still a new relationship. And the reality is I am honored and humbled and most appreciative of the collective board's vote of confidence in me to serve as our next superintendent. I also understand the profundity of this this role in which I serve, and the context of Gwinnett County, the fact that this this shift in leadership has not occurred in a quarter of a century. That is, that's just not a standard that most school districts can actually comprehend, given that the average tenure of a superintendent in this country in K-12 education is it's actually 2.8 to 3.2 years. That's the average superintendency. And I was even able to double that in my previous organization. That was 6 years. But to understand, what Gwinnett County Public Schools has had certainly in its previous superintendent, the reality is I do understand that the challenges that exist, but also the great opportunities and this emerging relationship with new members on our board and members who are coming to the end of their first terms. It's a unique opportunity, and I think emerging is just that. We're getting to know each other as individuals, getting to know each other as leaders, and working towards improving outcomes for each and every student who exists and is enrolled, and supporting the adults who are helping our students to thrive each and every day.
So what happens when there's a disagreement between what your vision is for something and the boards? How does that get worked out?
Well, like any relationship, we talk about it. I've in my previous experience, and I think our board has appreciated how I've engaged in communication with them. I have multiple communication strategies, and I share with them that when I first arrived, I asked this question: do we want to be a team of 5+1 or a team of 6? And the difference, as they raised an eyebrow, a team of 6, it really means that we're all working together. We have unique roles, each one of us. At the same time, the power and the promise of our effectiveness is in our collective voice, our collective effort. And so when we don't agree, and that's okay, we have opportunities to talk about it. So I have one-on-one scheduled meetings with our board on a regular basis. I have 2x2s, meaning I meet with two board members at once. And so that provides me an opportunity to learn and how one board member may feel about a specific topic. But most importantly, two board members have an opportunity to collaborate and actually get to know each other on different levels. So you may have heard me say the most effective way to communicate, I believe it, is when it happens in seven times in at least 7 ways. That is the strategy that we're working towards. We're not perfect. No board governance team is. At the same time, we are emerging and working to have those uncomfortable conversations. And I think that is the greatest start. Those are some of the hardest conversations to have. And we've been able to do that early on. And so I'm excited about the prospects of our board governance. I know we have a ways to go, and most importantly, the work that we have to accomplish is worth it. And it's certainly incumbent upon us to do this work well for the benefit of our entire GCPS community.
Dr. Watts, we're going to take one last quick break. And when we return, we're going to put your knowledge of GCPS to the test.
Okay.
Stick around, everyone. You don't want to miss this.
Successful mentoring programs help students become successful adults. The GCPS Community-Based Mentoring Program is currently looking for volunteers for this school year. We need caring adults who are willing to commit to making a difference in a Gwinnett student's life. Contact us now to reserve your spot in the next mentor training session.
And we're back. Dr. Watts, we're going to take you back to that time in your life that may have caused you a full-on panic attack or maybe a jolt of super confidence. You know, when you walked in your class and your teacher gave you a test or a quiz you weren't expecting. In other words, it's time for Pop Quiz. Pop Quiz is a series of multiple choice and or true or false questions about Gwinnett County Public Schools that you have 2 minutes to answer. The hope is, at the end of Pop Quiz, our listeners will have learned a few interesting facts about Gwinnett County Public Schools and you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm as sure as I can be. How about that?
Okay. All right. Well, here we go. Question one. Roughly how many new students has Gwinnett County Public Schools added since 2015 when you went to the Kent School District? All right. Number one. 4,000. Number two, 15,000. Number three, 250.
I'm going to say roughly 15,000.
Actually, it's 4,000.
What?
When you left in 2015, we had 176,000 students. Our latest count is around 180,000 students.
You know what? That makes sense. All right.
Question number two, true or false? The average low temperature in Georgia during the month of January is colder than the average low temperature during the month of January in Washington State.
The average low temperature. True or false?
It's a tricky one.
I'm going to say true.
Correct. You are right.
Yes.
According to weather.com, the average low temperature in Metro Atlanta in January is 33 degrees. In Kent, Washington, it is 36 degrees.
So here's a fun fact for you. 600 feet above sea level, it actually snows at 36 degrees in Kent, Washington.
Ah.
Yes. Yes.
See, you're teaching us right now.
There you go.
See, what do we say? You learn something new.
Every day. That's right.
Question number three. How many times during your first 2 weeks on the job did it take you a few seconds when you woke up in the morning to realize what city you were in? A, never. B, three times or less. Or C, greater than three times.
I would say a B, three times or less. There were times when I forgot. Yeah, I would say three or less.
Okay. Finish this sentence. When you are explaining something to someone, you should
always communicate it in at least seven times in at least seven ways.
Correct. I know I've heard that somewhere before, right?
Somewhere. There you go.
Final question, Dr. Watts. This is the toughest question of them all.
Uh-oh.
Okay? So if you need a couple seconds, you can take it.
Okay.
You know, if you need to walk around, get your mind right, you can have it. Are you ready?
I think I'm ready.
Question number four, the last one. Would you rather hunt and butcher your own meat or never eat meat again?
Well, since I actually, I was a vegetarian for about 2 years during one of my college experiences. I don't know. I mean, I like to fish, never really hunted, but I could be a vegetarian. I could do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, stand by. We have our crack team of accountants calculating the results of this test.
Okay.
And you passed.
Wow. I'm so proud. Thank you. You're a great teacher.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, listen, I'm learning from the best here at GCPS. Dr. Watts, thank you so much for stopping by Teaching Gwinnett and chatting with us. Can I count on you to make another appearance before the end of the school year?
You can count on me. I look forward to it. And thank you for having me. Appreciated your line of questions. And whatever I can do to continue to support, Team GCPS, you got it.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that.
I appreciate it. I will.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Teaching Gwinnett. You can find us on the GCPS home webpage, Google Play Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and just about anywhere podcasts can be found. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Until next time, so long.